Warning, we haven't gotten any less vulgar since last week.
This week's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Aura Frames and by Vulgarity for Charity. One more week to get those donations in, people. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
Hi, I'm professional white hat and amateur video gamer Eat Meal. When you spend 10 hours a day interacting with people on the internet, it becomes unequivocally clear that we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's November 20th.
And it's Hug-a-Runner Day.
Okay, but only if they come to me. I'm not chasing. Absolutely not.
I'm no illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. And from Bill Mars, New Jersey, Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Waycross, Georgia, this is Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we're halfway through our atheist mission.
You'll never guess what Jeffrey Epstein and the Catholic League have in common.
And Michael Marshall will be here to sound chipper no matter how fucked up the stuff he's talking about is.
But first, the diatribe.
All right, folks, we are in the home stretch. We've got 7 more days of Vulgarity for Charity left, and we don't have any episodes coming out next week. Sorry, it's American Thanksgiving. So this is going to be my last chance to sell you on making a donation. So let's set aside the roast for a second, because this was never really about the roasts. There's always been this tacit understanding that we would be happy to insult your shitty brother-in-law for free. And you'd be happy to donate to the charity without Tom ripping out anybody's soul and leaving it quivering and naked before them. We mostly just add the vulgarity because it rhymes. And let's set aside for a second all the great work that Recovering from Religion does. And it is great work. It's life-saving work in some instances. They help ex-religious people find community. They help doubting religious people find clarity. They help traumatized atheists find therapy. Sorry, I'm supposed to be setting this aside. It's really good shit, but I'm going to set it aside. We set all that aside. We set aside the charity that we're raising money for and the way that we're raising money. And what's left? Us. Our community. Our godless, heathenous, lecherous, porn-addicted, baby-eating, gay, trans, asexual, bisexual, demisexual, feminist, socialist, communist, demon-filled, God-hating, Satan-worship, abortion-having, woke, liberal, radical, atheist community. That community that has no expectation of posthumous reward. Hell, no guarantee of posthumous reward, right? Since we're only doing 100 of the roasts. That community made up of people whose morals are constantly called into question for no fucking reason but their refusal to play along with a lie. That community was called upon to do good, and it did so to the tune of $70,000 and counting again. Now, look, I get that fate wasn't exactly kind to the timing of our fundraiser this year, right? The government shutdown and all of those layoffs and the interruptions to SNAP benefits fucked a lot of people up and left a lot more people in immediate need than normal. But even with all of that, we're still on pace to possibly hit our goal of $100,000 raised before midnight on Thanksgiving. And that could only happen if ours was a community made up of people that were at least as generous as the people who are trying to buy their way into paradise with their charity. And look, we can talk on and on about what that says about them, right? Because either it means that they don't actually think that there's a God up there tallying the score, or they genuinely believe that and still can't be bothered to be more charitable than people who don't. Whatever it's saying, it's not complimentary. But let's set that aside too, and let's just look in the mirror. Because this isn't a huge podcast, right? We're not one of the podcasting titans. You gotta start dividing the subgenres pretty thin before we're in the top 10 of anything. Our audience doesn't skew towards millionaires and billionaires. It's just a bunch of people who are downright eager to support a good cause when they see one. So this isn't just a gold star beside the name of our podcast and our partners in this thing, Tom and Cecil over at Cognitive Dissonance. And it's not just all the shit that it's going to do and allow Recovering from Religion to do, right? It's also proof of concept. And that concept is fucking humanism. So it's pretty important, right? It's a reminder that every time churches justify their existence by all the charity they inspire and the lack of secular equivalents, they're full of shit and they know it. They know it as much as they care to check. Human beings are just inclined to help one another, and all you got to do is let them. Make an avenue they can go down, and they will. So one last time, unless you count the ad later in the show and the hearts I'm going to give you in the outro. If you want to help us get over our $100,000 goal, please go to recoveringforreligion.org and donate as much as you can. And even if you don't want somebody roasted, be sure to click the Vulgarity for Charity tab along the banner and fill out the form so that they know to count your donation towards our total. That's recoveringforreligion.org, or just check the very first link on the show notes, because good is better when it's for its own sake.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight are the question mark and semicolon to my exclamation point, Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick. Fellas, what are we punctuating for?
Or is it a question mark?
Yeah, I don't know what you've heard, Noah, but I've got a full colon.
All right. Well, despite their repeated entreaties not to segue directly to their ads from comments about Eli's full colon, we're going to pause for a word from this week's sponsor, Aura Frames.
Hey, podcast listener. I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright.
And I'm Noah Illusions.
We know it can be tough to shop for friends and family around the holidays, but today we'd like to take a moment to let you in on a little secret. Your mom wants an Aura Frame.
Aura Frames are digital picture frames that you can fill with unlimited pictures and videos of their favorite thing, you.
And your kids, if you have those.
Or your pets.
And there's no need to be tech savvy. If you know mom's Wi-Fi and password, you can set up everything for her while her Aura Frame is still in the box. All she has to do is plug it in.
And she might call you for help with that. Admittedly.
She might. It's true. But for a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com and get $45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code SCATHING at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code SCATHING. This exclusive Black Friday, Cyber Monday deal is their best of the year, so order now before it ends. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Aura Frames. Your mom's favorite thing is you. And your kids.
Or your pets.
Unless she sucks.
Oh, yeah, unless she sucks.
Yeah, don't get her anything if she sucks.
Yeah, for sure.
In our lead story tonight, we have more delightful demographic news that really makes me wish we were in a show you charts kind of medium. This news comes to us from Gallup in a new analysis of their world poll data, which puts the precipitous decline in religiosity in America in perspective. Now, I don't want to take too much credit for this.
I do, going to be my whole thing.
No, I know. But the drop in religiosity in America in the time that this podcast has been on the air now ranks among the biggest drops for any country in the history of the world. Well, okay, so the history of Gallup's world poll, which they only started doing in 2007, but it's still a pretty big fucking deal.
Okay, we got to thank so many people, Eli. So many people. Okay, so first of all, I mean, like, all glory to Jesus Christ, obviously.
Great job, of course.
Well, also some glory to Darwin. Great. Einstein. Nietzsche. Great kill. The Boston Globe. Loved that. Good reporting.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
Adrian Brody. He's fun.
Sure. Sure.
Love the accent. Oh, and not taking this survey right after someone invented fire.
Well, that helps. Yeah. So this analysis isn't looking at religious identity, but rather religious centrality. That is, how big a role does religion play in one's life? And there are a bunch of different ways of measuring that, right? Like, you could measure church attendance or frequency of prayer or whatever. But if you want to compare across different religious backgrounds, the best way to do it is just ask, does religion play a central role in your life? And on that measure, the United States has dropped from 66% in 2015 to a minority of 49% today. And that marks one of the largest drops of any 10-year period in any of the 160 countries that they poll in that survey. The only countries that ever beat us out at any point were Greece, Italy, and Poland.
Okay, but to be fair, I think my answer to that question would be yes, because religion's my job and everything. I feel like they need a follow-up to weed out the atheist podcasters.
Or the women trying to exercise their rights, right? Because religion plays a pretty central role in their lives, too. Yeah, maybe they should rephrase it to, does your religion play a central role? You know? Now, of course, these numbers might seem like they're at odds with the actual policies and directions of the country. As Christianity is losing its numbers, it's gaining in power. But asking why religion is getting more powerful as its hold on the population is dwindling is like asking how this leopard keeps getting more dangerous the more avenues of escape we cut off. Right? Religion is about control. And when you have the overwhelming majority of the population under your thumb already, that power can be as discreet as you need it to be, right? You can just do the will of the people right after you tell the people what to will. But as your numbers dwindle, the mechanisms of power have to grow more overt to stay equally powerful. And that's basically the whole fucking story of American politics for the last 20 years, to be honest.
Okay, well, I don't want to take credit for that. Just the more atheism stuff.
Okay, yes, it's noted. And in a loudspeaker news, we have good news out of the Supreme Court, which means in modern parlance that we don't have bad news out of the Supreme Court. That's the closest we get to good news anymore. So here's the specific bad news that we don't have. The court had a chance to further enshrine their perverse defamation of the church-state separation principle by taking up a case about a Christian school that was denied a request to pray over the PA at a state-sponsored football game, and they didn't.
Oh, yeah. Theocrats who've imposed religion so completely we would have called their actions revolution where they 50 years ago did not feel like doing more.
Yep, that's it.
New segment on the show.
The end. Yeah.
Nice. New segment.
Okay, but here's the thing. Like, these guys are just caving on their values as theocrats.
Thank you.
Like, I've always hated their opinions, but at least I respected their commitment to the bit. Okay. And now it's just sad. They're just sad people.
Pin in that. Yeah, so...
No respect.
Now, this is a story that we've actually been covering since way the hell back on episode 477, when a judge dismissed it for being stupid in a scathing rebuke. How scathing? Well, at one point, he literally called their standing into question because their football team sucked. So it's not like they had to worry about going to a state championship again anytime soon. Seriously, here's the quote. Quote, Cambridge Christian admits the competitiveness of its football team has waned over the last few seasons, and the team is in what is called a rebuilding phase that it expects to last for a few more years. Hope springs eternal, but standing cannot be built on hope.
Yeah, same for standings. You're at the bottom of those.
Yep, that's
fucking great. And a rebuilding phase for a high school football.
For a high school football,
team,
that's amazing. Right, continuing the quote, with all due respect to the Cambridge Christian Fighting Lancers, there's nothing to suggest that the team's participation in a future football state championship is imminent or even likely, end quote, drop mic.
Catch this football and I'll take the case. How about that?
Wow. Fucking
right in the face, huh? That's all right. Well, we're not. Oh, man, that's blood, huh?
Okay. A lot of blood. But it wasn't just that the school lacked standing. The case was also moot because the piece of shit governor of Florida signed a law making it so that if the same event ever happened again, the school would have to give the preachy fucks access to the PA system anyway. So it's a case that had no standing, was moot, and would lose on the merits. But despite all that, the school and its conservative legal backers at First Liberty Institute kept appealing and fighting. They got it undismissed, and then it lost, and then they got it appealed, and then the appeal lost, and then the appeal got appealed, and that lost, and then they appealed that all the way to the Supreme Court. And now the Supreme Court has finally killed the damn case all the way dead by declining to hear it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Squinner indeed.
And as shitty as this case is, there still was quite a bit of concern among secular watchdogs that the SCOTUS would use it to dismantle the legal basis for the argument that state speech can't endorse religion. So it came as a welcome relief when they failed to scrape together 4 votes to hear it. That being said, it should not be seen as a sign that the conservative majority on the court doesn't want to further erode that right. It's far more likely that they just wanted to do it with a case that isn't so damn shaky. Either way, waking up with the same number of rights you went to sleep with counts as a victory these days. So cheers.
Fuck yeah. New segment. And in Magnet Carta news. If you listen to this past week's Skeptocrat, I mentioned that one of the most dangerous beliefs a well-educated, skeptical person can have is that as a layman, you are capable of reading scientific papers. The belief that we can understand papers based on an abstract or that we can draw larger conclusions based on one study leads all sorts of otherwise intelligent people to believe very stupid things. But what happens when you read a paper and you're already an idiot? Well, this week, we got our answer as a conservative radio host, Joe Miller, warned us that the transes are coming for your religion.
Okay, just to be clear, when Eli says this week, he means in 2015 when this news story happened.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And okay. I would love to claim this was a very clever meta-commentary from Eli.
That's what it is.
People who only read the abstract or only read the headline without looking at the actual numbers. Like, for example, the four numbers that represent the year at the top of a news article. Or, you know, people who click on an email and don't look at the one right after from the same person that says, and I didn't check the date as the subject line of that email to scathingnews@gmail.com.
You didn't let me finish.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. What's up?
This is a new segment for our show called Blast from the Past, where I cover articles we didn't cover back when they came out.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. This is a new segment. Do you have music?
Hit it, Anna.
Oh, you have music for it?
Okay. Mm-hmm. La, la, la. Blast from the past.
This is Anna.
Here's our news. Yep, that's our Stone Interrupter. Here's our new segment. So you can never be pregnant.
What?
With ignorance. It's Blast from the Past. I'm Anna.
No notes. Perfect.
Thank you. Anna for that great. It's crazy that she reacted when I recorded.
Love the new segment.
Yeah. Right. So first off, big thanks to Stu for sending us this story to Scathing News.
Not Stu who sent it?
No, I will not be thanking Stu because Stu betrayed me with his, what's with you
today?
Anyways.
Stu. It's just Stu.
To Stu for sending us Atheist News, scathingnews@gmail.com. You can make Heath listen to one episode of Jill Stein's podcast on any weeknight he's trying to fall asleep. scathingnews@gmail.com.
Okay, well, I actually find the Russian language to be very calming. I want this. Not a punishment. Stupid.
Right. So the study that got Joe Miller's proverbial panties in a twist comes from UCLA. And according to a Raw story, quote, using transcranial magnets, the researchers were able to target and temporarily shut down the region. Subjects were asked questions about death and to rate a negative essay about the United States they were told was written by an immigrant. The result of the magnetic destimulation of the area of the brain in question resulted in less belief in religion and greater acceptance of immigrants, end quote.
Okay, so you might be thinking this idiot host heard transcranial magnets and now he thinks there's important metal inside of his stupid face that makes him a boy, but the magnets can move it around and change that. Sadly, though, it's going to be dumber than that.
Significantly, yes.
Well, say what you will about their master plan, but this seems like a way less invasive way of turning the frogs gay.
True, true. And look, there's a lot of bad conclusions reasonable people could draw from that study, right? That there's a single religion part of your brain, that this study proves all religious belief comes from brain dysfunction or overactivity. But that was not Joe's take. No, Joe's take was that this was going to lead to an anti-conservative eugenics.
This is not going to be Joe's take. It's going to be the take from the guest on the show, William Briggs, a very stupid professor somehow at Cornell. That's who's going to be saying the thing. That's the quote. Okay.
Quote.
Go ahead.
Basically, what they're doing is they're trying to bring back eugenics, even in a way, Briggs said, his voice wavering.
Hey, there's a little clue for you in there.
Quote. Continuing the quote. Because they're identifying what they say are biological constituents for belief. Therefore, they're able to test for these biological constituents.
I see you over here trying to get me on board with eugenics. Nice try, you clever little bastard.
He continues.
Nope. Now it's going to be Joe Miller, the host.
So Joe says.
Briggs does not continue.
Joe. This is Joe. Who I was talking about. He's talking now and before. And I can't emphasize enough that this is not apropos of anything. Quote. The whole transgender crowd, they see their main opponent as being those of faith. And so obviously they're going to use any aggressive tactics they can to move forward that agenda, end quote.
So yeah, that's how religiosity declined in America.
Yeah.
Trans people made an anti-Christian face magnet and then they They've been doing transcranial eugenics for the last decade since this story came out.
And might I add, they've been doing a kind of shit job. Get your eugenics together, trans people. Come
Thank on. You. This is our septum theory. So, yeah, chances are holding a magnet to your bigot dad's head isn't going to do anything. But based on how democracy, education, and the social internet is going, I, as a skeptic, am open to trying. Get him off the fridge and let us know how it works, people. Press hard.
And finally tonight, in I Was Told There Would Be No Math News, Megyn Kelly did some pedo math the other day.
Sure did.
She was talking about the Epstein files during her show on Sirius XM last week, and she decided to really think outside of the box for a minute.
Actually, there isn't a space between Sirius and XM in the company title, Heath. Now we're even. We're even now.
What is happening?
You misspelled Sirius in your correction, Elon.
No, stay out of the feud. We're tied. We're tied right now. We're tied right now in the feud, and you're joining.
Do you think it's like solemn frequency modulation? Is that what you were thinking? Was okay. Anyway, when Megan was thinking outside the box, I want to be clear about the box. That's the one that, you know, we're in, I would hope, where we don't look for weird technicalities about the word pedophile to soften the image of Jeffrey Epstein. It's a pretty popular box. Lots of people in it.
Big crowded in here, yeah.
Big crowd in the box, and that's cool. I think that's good. And then there's Megyn Kelly. She's outside of it, and she's doing a visionary paradigm shift in pedophile apologetics. She wants us all to know that technically, Epstein wasn't a pedophile because it wasn't prepubescent victims. It was young teenagers. And that means he's a different word that I don't care to learn lest I might ever use it and sound insane. So that was what Megyn Kelly did for her job that day.
Man, who'd have thought she'd miss being a Fox News shill?
Right.
But here we are.
Yeah. No, look, I'm sure in terms of psychology and the prison system and shit, there's probably a really important distinction between a pedophile and an ephebophile. Sorry, I like all the words. But if anybody's like ever explaining that difference to you unbidden, that person should be on a fucking list, Megan.
100%. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Turns out arguing about proper child rapist nomenclature does not go great. And there was a bit of a backlash. But luckily, there was a knight in shining armor to defend Megyn Kelly. More importantly, defend a nuanced understanding of kid fucking minutia and vocabulary. Of course,
you love nuance.
That I do love a good nuance. Not today, though. If you can't, if you do a nuance and you don't get me on board, you're fucking up.
Right. You've really found.
I'm a cishet white guy. I love a good nuance, especially an obnoxious one. You didn't get me. You fucked up hard.
Yeah.
So the person who was defending that nuanced understanding and the vocabulary words, that would be Bill Donahue.
Oh.
President of the Catholic League. I guess a very upsetting signal went up into the sky and Bill swooped in with a strongly worded essay to defend Megyn Kelly.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Donahue just had encyclopedias worth of ephebophile, pedophile distinction stuff ready to go.
He sure did.
He does.
And a big thanks to Dan for mining the depths of CatholicLeague.org and sending us a link to scathingnews@gmail.com. Dan gets the satisfaction of, I would imagine, a very confused algorithm. Like for me, that algorithm is currently trying to figure out how to finish the pattern Bulldog Hammock, Zoran Mamdani, Tralalero Tralala Shark in Nikes, Catholic League blank. Yeah, and that's tricky.
Coincidentally, that series of terms also, Curtis Sliwa's concession speech. So it all worked out.
You can activate him as a soldier if you say tralalero, tralala at the right time. So here's what Megyn Kelly said that Bill Donahue is going to be defending with an essay. Megan was having a normal discussion about Jeffrey Epstein being bad. And then she lost her goddamn mind and added, Epstein was into the barely legal type. He liked 15-year-old girls.
So you mean barely illegal, man.
Illegal.
We would just say illegal and girls. Yep, child. She continues. And I realize this is disgusting. I'm definitely not trying to make an excuse for this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay, so out of frame right now, her producer, I would assume, is making wild motions and sprinting towards a big power strip somewhere. But Megan continued, I'm just giving you facts that he wasn't into, like, 8-year-olds. But he liked the very young teen types that could pass for even younger than they were, but would look legal to a passerby. There's a difference between a 15-year-old and a 5-year-old, end quote from Megyn Kelly.
But they both know that I shouldn't be saying this sentence right now, so it's...
Yeah, want to be super clear that the unspoken assumed clause at the end of that, there's a difference between 15-year-olds and a 5-year-old, is in terms of fuckability, right?
Yeah, sure was. And just a quick piece of context before we get to Bill Donahue's fucking think piece about that. Some of Epstein's known victims were as young as 11 years old.
Jesus.
And here's Bill Donahue to defend that guy.
The barely legal type, if you will.
Yeah, fuck. Here's Bill Donahue. Quote, Megyn Kelly is being bashed for saying that Jeffrey Epstein was not a pedophile. Her critics are plainly ignorant, and their gripe is not with her. It's with the American Academy of Pediatrics. And out of frame, Bill's editor is saying, not clear where you're going, bud, but definitely don't rank the races in terms of puberty age, if you don't mind. Bill continues, it defines puberty as beginning at age 10 for whites and Hispanics and 9 for African Americans. A pedophile is a person who has sex with a prepubescent male or female, meaning someone 10 or younger.
Okay, weird nitpick to have with that sentence, I know, but the American Academy of Pediatrics doesn't define puberty as starting younger for African Americans. African Americans tend to go into puberty younger, but the AAP doesn't hand out ball hair and pit stains to black kids at 9. It's
don't think that's how
you do it. Well, so, in Bill's defense, though, I think this information is all on the back of the Catholic priest ID card now for easy access. So he's just quoting from that.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Okay. Well, after a long scuffle with that editor who was yelling from the background earlier, and now I assume he's locked in a closet somewhere. Bill Donahue
give
continued.
Give me the microphone
yeah,
back.
There he is.
Give it to
there
me.
Is. Slam. He continues. Kelly.
Stop crying.
Kelly rightly noted, we have yet to see anybody come forward and say, I was under 10. I was under 14. She was also correct to say there's a difference between a 15-year-old and a 5-year-old. She was not justifying predators of any age, and it is indeed malicious to suggest she was. The context of her remarks was whether Epstein's predatory behavior qualifies as pedophilia. Clearly, it does not. Why does this matter to the Catholic League?
Oh, no, he's become self-aware.
Watch, I love the fantasy world he's living in where literally anybody was wondering, like, why are you chiming in on this?
What have I become? My greatest friend? Everyone, give me the computer back.
Seriously, he wrote exactly what was in my brain, but just a different tone. Like, for me, I was a heckler being like, hey, Bill, why does this matter to the Catholic League so much? Here's Bill Donahue answering his own question. Quote, for too long, the media and the chattering class have said the Catholic Church clergy abuse scandal was due to pedophile priests. Wrong. End quote. And oh man, I'm just going to pause so we can all realize how hard we just got pwned. We were wrong about that.
Fucking please proceed, Governor.
Seriously. And he does. Here's the insane conclusion. I think Bill Donahue truly believes he makes a point here, but I genuinely have no idea what that point might be. Maybe you guys can help me out. He writes, quote, the data clearly show that the vast majority of priestly victims were male, 81%, and that 78% were post-pubescent.
Why is that important, Bill?
Why is that important? Seriously, he said next. Because it means the molesters were homosexuals. When males have sex with males who are post-pubescent, that's called homosexuality, not pedophilia. But the media ignored the data, thus avoiding the role that homosexual priests played. This allowed them to tag the offenders as pedophiles. The fact is, only 3.8% of clergy sexual abuse victims were boys 10 or younger. End quote. That was helpful to the Catholic Church or Catholic League?
You guys ever feel like you're going to wake up from the simulation and they're going to be like, hey, not bad, but you didn't kill Bill Donahue, so we're going to pop you back in there and try again. We cannot get this thing adjusted correctly.
All right. Well, now that Bill Donahue has done bragging about how old the kids they raped were, I suppose we can close the headlines for the night. Heath, Eli, thanks as always.
Jumanji.
And when we come back, Michael Marshall will be here to give the show some international flair. One of our favorite things to do on this show is shirk our responsibilities and pawn them off on somebody else. And there's no somebody else we'd rather pawn them off on than our friend Michael Marshall.
Yeah, especially since he has all that free time now that he killed QED.
Yeah, no, exactly. So we're excited to welcome back the co-host of the No Rogan Experience and Skeptics with a K, Michael Marshall, for another installment of
Who's Woo?
Okay, so usually for Who's Woo, the lines are pretty clear when we're talking about people. You know, here's a person who, whether they mean it or not, have made their name for spreading pseudoscience. And maybe they had a life before they got into the game, and maybe that was an interesting life, or maybe it was a dull life, but the reason we know them is because of the bullshit. And it's kind of rare that their story starts somewhere credible, or notable, or laudable even. But it does happen. And today, I actually want to talk about one such case. This is someone who was feted by many as a public intellectual before their fall.
John Fetterman? He fell. He took a fall. RFK Jr. kind of works too for that. Okay.
Yeah.
It does. It's true. It's somebody who arguably did go from who's who to who's woo. Because today, we're going to talk about Naomi Wolf.
Oh, quite literally the Naomi that cried wolf. Great fucking pick, dude.
Yeah.
Great pick.
So Naomi Rebecca Wolf was born in 1962 in San Francisco, California. Her mother is an anthropologist and an author, and her father is a Romanian Gothic horror novel scholar and university lecturer.
What kind of fucking Mad Lib shit is that? Imagine how excited he got when he finally saw a want ad in that field, right?
You could just say you're a Dracula professor, by the way. Like, that's a long-winded way of saying you're a Dracula professor.
Oh, shit. Oh, nope. They're doing an internal hire. Damn it.
So pretty clearly, academia was in her blood.
Nice.
She went to Yale.
Blood.
And then she was a Rhodes Scholar at the University of Oxford from 1985 to 1987. She says she was actually dissuaded from submitting her PhD thesis while she was studying there. And she attributed that resistance to a mix of sexism, snobbery, and anti-Semitism. But she would eventually complete her doctorate in English literature in 2015. And we will come back to that doctorate.
Are you sure? Because it's a literary degree, and those never come back up.
Also, I can't help but notice that Hamas was founded the year Naomi left Oxford. By Oxford, perhaps? We'll never know. Condemn Hamas, Oxford. Condemn Hamas.
Condemn Oxford, Hamas.
You condemn Hamas right now.
So following Oxford, she embarked upon a writing career. She found fame in 1991 with The Beauty Myth, which was a feminist blockbuster and international bestseller, which argued that beauty is a socially constructed concept designed by the patriarchy to shackle women. So far, so not worthy of a who's woo. Although, there were warning signs that maybe all that academia that flowed through her veins was bypassing her brain from time to time. The book claims that 150,000 women die every single year in the US from anorexia, and it cites the American Anorexia and Bulimia Association. However, that organization says she completely misquoted them. The 150,000 figure referred to sufferers, not fatalities. And the actual number of annual deaths from anorexia was closer to 100, not 150,000.
It's off by a bit.
Okay, we're going to quibble about four little orders of magnitude, Marsh. Come on.
And to make it worse, Naomi got caught on that terrible stat by Christina Hoff Summers. Anti-feminist, so-called feminist, and now a TERF in residence at the American Enterprise Institute. The point is, don't make people like Christina Hoff Summers correct about stuff, even for a second.
Oh, God.
You got to watch yourself.
Yeah, you have no idea how many names I had to drop out of this piece because they were right about her, but are now awful people. There were so many people.
Right.
Okay, but have you guys taken a moment today to appreciate how much stuff you have built up for when I eventually make my villain turn to Mormonism? I mean, I have given you... you don't need a Batman contingency plan. It's just our podcast. It's so easy. You're welcome.
So the thing is, that mistaken stat, that wasn't a one-off. Wolf also claimed that 3.5 million British people suffer with anorexia or bulimia, which in 1991... that'd mean 6% of the population.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and when she was challenged on that, she said, well, she calculated those figures herself by extrapolating from a single clinic. And experts did not agree that this was a realistic number. In fact, of the 23 statistics that are cited in the beauty myth, 18 of them were found to be incorrect. And on average, Wolf's figures were 8 times larger than the real numbers.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
None of that stopped Germaine Greer naming the book the most important feminist publication since The Female Eunuch, which, yeah, that was Greer's own book.
Well, okay, let's admit, Germaine Greer got that one thing wrong, and then she was right about everything else forever. I think we can all agree.
And then 2 years later, Wolf published her follow-up, Fire with Fire, which espoused what she called power feminism. And that was typified by the way in which Anita Hill's sexual harassment accusation against the US Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas provoked a gender quake that turned American women into the political ruling class.
Really?
Oh, did it?
Oh, I missed that.
An idea that other feminist writers described as grossly exaggerated and a dubious oversimplification and highly debatable assertion.
Mm-hmm. She thinks the time a very obvious sexual harasser got appointed to the Supreme Court anyway was an upturn of the social order. Mm-hmm. What did she think was happening before?
I like harassing Anita Hill and boofing with Squee used to say private? Like this was like revolutionary in that sense? I don't get that.
So at this point, the die was cast, with her feminist academic peers describing her as a sloppy thinker and incompetent writer, but none of which diminished her growing reputation as a feminist public intellectual across the course of several more books. She even took up a role as an unpaid consultant in Bill Clinton's 1996 re-election bid, looking at how to better reach female voters.
There you go. Political ruling class, unpaid intern was the job that was just mentioned. Genderquake.
Yeah, her idea was to focus on Bill Clinton's family values as a good father and head of the household. And she was at least right that Bill Clinton's presidency would become synonymous with head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like not reaching enough female voters wasn't the problem for him, actually. It was the... Yeah. Did.
So by 2007, she was turning her hand to critique of fascism with The End of America, where she compared post-9/11 politics in the United States to her own 10-step checklist of fascism through history, from the Nazis to the Italian fascists. A review in The Atlantic pointed out that the historical parallels that she lists between historical dictators and modern American politicians are entirely based on cherry-picking and misusing her sources. And by 2010, Wolf was giving interviews about how Barack Obama's presidency actually really resembled Adolf Hitler's dictatorship when you think about it.
Really?
Yeah. They both wore tan suits, for example.
Yeah, and people said, you are Hitler in both cases.
Yeah, there's that.
Marsh, I just want to point out that if you're going to use liberal failure who turned into a right-wing shill for economic success for Who's Woo, we're going to have to start having you on every week. Okay, we don't have none of this monthly bullshit.
Yeah, that's fair. So during the Occupy Wall Street protests of 2011, Naomi Wolf was arrested for what she claims was advising protesters of their legal rights. And then a month after that arrest, she says she was given leaked documents that proved the FBI was working directly under instruction from the banking organizations to treat Occupy Wall Street as a terrorist threat.
Really?
Multiple journalists pointed out at the time that the documents that she shared as proof of that contained nothing of the sort, and that her version of events was little more than a conspiracy theory.
Stop saying packet data, that's nothing, don't do that. And listen, I can tell you from personal experience, Occupy Wall Street was not doing any terrorism. Like, even if they wanted to do terrorism, they weren't doing shit. For most of that time, Zuccotti Park was full of people glamping in brand new tents from REI, making like chai lattes with fancy equipment in their really nice tents. It was like a tailgate for a poetry slam more than a protest. Half the people in the park were taking a smoke break from their job as traders on the New York Mercantile Exchange and just like playing chess with an old hippie for fun and having chai lattes. The other half were old hippies or very obvious undercover cops. Nothing was happening there.
Yeah.
I feel like Heath's real issue there was with the chai lattes. Did you guys hear that? I'm picking up.
It was very anti-chai.
Very anti-chai.
I felt anti-chai.
I enjoy a chai latte.
Indiophobic.
I like a black-eyed chai. Condemn with a little espresso in there.
That little more than a conspiracy theory line was one that Naomi Wolf would soon be crossing, especially with her habit now of spotting fascism everywhere. In October 2014, Wolf took to Facebook to just ask questions about videos that showed ISIS beheading journalists from the US and the UK. And according to Wolf, the videos were staged by the US government and no such journalists were killed. And those grieving parents that you can see, crisis actors.
Do you ever think real crisis actors read this stuff and they're like, have some respect for the fucking craft, lady?
And responding to criticism of these opinions, Wolf just doubled down, saying, quote, all the people who are attacking me right now for conspiracy theories have no idea what they're talking about. People who assume the dominant narrative must be true and the dominant reasons must be real are not experienced in how that world works. I stand by what I wrote. And then shortly afterwards, she deleted the post and retracted her statements. But she said the videos were not yet independently confirmed by two sources as authentic and claimed that the single source for the videos was actually in the pocket of the US government. None of those things were true either. The videos had been independently verified by multiple sources.
What, and even if they were fake, what was the dog being wagged there? Right. They're trying to turn Americans against ISIS?
Yeah,
right. I feel like we didn't need the nudge on that.
I already got the chainsaw. We have to do it now. Come on.
And then that same year, she claimed that the US troops who had been dispatched to West Africa weren't actually there to help treat Ebola, but were instead there to import it back to the US for use as a bioweapon to secure a military coup on US soil. And then also again in 2014 still, she explained that the Scottish independence referendum had been rigged in order to keep Scotland under the control of Westminster. And I am unclear why.
Why the fuck would we even want Scotland, Michael Marshall?
I'm unclear why she thought that, to be clear, is what I mean there. Scotland's lovely.
I'm unclear what they do there.
So from reaching those initial lofty intellectual heights to sit on her admittedly pretty wobbly pedestal, we come to the book that would be Wolf's complete undoing and the thing that would send her skittering very firmly off into Who's Woo territory.
Yeah, so far she's doing awesome. I don't know why this would be the...
She's not doing great, but she seems like a decent person enough. So at the beginning anyway, she seemed like a decent person, but okay, it's going to get even worse now.
It's going to get even worse. And it comes back to that doctorate at the University of Oxford, which she finally completed in 2015, the thesis of which formed the basis of her 2019 book, which was called Outrages, Sex, Censorship, and the Criminalization of Love. So that book, and in fact, her very PhD, was a study into how homosexuality had been punished by British society, including the execution of sodomites. Okay. Oprah's magazine listed it as one of their top books of the year. And then the very day after that, all copies were recalled from US bookstores and pulped.
Oh. Okay, but let's not blame Oprah here. That was one unreliable person that she promoted.
One time. Exactly, yes. Her and Jermaine Greer.
So the thing is, in May 2019, Wolf was being interviewed on BBC Radio by Matthew Sweet, who actually spoke at the most recent QED.
Oh, bring that up again and break our hearts anew, why don't you?
Yeah.
So Matthew Sweet is a historian of the period in question here, the period she was talking about. And during the interview, Sweet highlighted that one of the central lines of evidence that Wolf relies upon to prove the persecution of homosexuals was this list that she'd found of several dozen executions. And Sweet told her live on air, I don't think you're right about this, before explaining that one of the people that her book claims was executed in the 1860s was actually released, not dead. She completely misunderstood the text she was citing, because in each of the cases, the victim was listed as death recorded. But that actually meant at the time that the judge had seen fit to pardon that person, but was legally required to write death in the records to satisfy the records. Hmm. And that radio interview going out live on the BBC makes for incredibly excruciating listening. It's amazing.
Okay, well, excruciating listening is what we're all about here on Scathing Atheist. So I believe we brought that clip.
And I found like several dozen executions, but that was, again, only looking at the Old Bailey records and the crime tables.
Several dozen executions.
Correct. And this corrects a misapprehension that is in every website, that the last man was executed for sodomy in Britain in 1835.
I don't think you're right about this. One of the cases that you look at that's salient in your report is that of Thomas Silver. It says, teenagers were now convicted more often. Indeed, that year, which is 1859, 14-year-old Thomas Silver was actually executed for committing sodomy. The boy was indicted for an unnatural offence, guilty, death recorded. This is the first time the phrase unnatural offence entered the Old Bailey records. Thomas Silver wasn't executed. Death recorded. I was really surprised by this, and I looked it up. Death recorded is what's in, I think, most of these cases that you've identified as executions. It doesn't mean that he was executed. It was a category that was created in 1823 that allowed judges to abstain from pronouncing a sentence of death on any capital convict whom they considered to be a fit subject for pardon. I don't think any of the executions you've identified here actually happened.
Well, that's a really important thing to investigate. What is your understanding of what death recorded means?
Death recorded, this is also from, I've just read you the definition of it there from the Old Bailey website. But I've got here a newspaper report about Thomas Silver, and also something from the prison records that show the date of his discharge.
The prisoner was found guilty and sentence of death was recorded.
Yeah.
But see, but the jury recommended the prisoner to mercy on account of his youth.
See, I think this is a kind of, when I found this, I didn't really know what to do with it, because I think it's quite a big problem with your argument. Also, it's the nature of the offence.
Yeah.
Here. Thomas Silver committed an indecent assault on a 6-year-old boy.
Ah! Oh, sorry, I cut off the end of the clip. The end of that clip is this. Girl, you gotta hit him with the neither here nor there.
Oh God, it's so rough.
Ring. What? Doodly do. I have to doodly do out of here. Poof. God damn it, that was rough.
Punch him in the throat. Literally anything except allowing him to keep talking.
I like the honesty of it though. It was like, people should investigate my books. Fuck.
Yeah. People should investigate that before they do a PhD thesis based around it and then write a book all about it.
One would think that's what a PhD thesis is.
The most brutal thing is that he invited her on and just printed that out and handed it to her live.
Whoa. Rude.
And yeah, as is clear there, it's worse than that even, that because the crime that is listed as sodomy doesn't mean homosexuality. Sodomy is just a broad category that was in use at the time, and it covered a range of sex crimes. And she was, as the historian Fern Riddell put it, conflating child rapists and those taking part in acts of bestiality as being gay men in consensual relationships.
Mm.
And she was doing that in order to decry the persecution of homosexuality. This is the central tentpole, not just of her book, but her entire doctoral thesis. And she hadn't bothered to check what the term she was talking about actually meant.
What? To be fair, it was a literary degree.
Yes, thank you. I'm on Naomi's side here. Looking up stuff is for nerds.
Okay. I feel like you can very easily write about the persecution of gay people in 19th century England without making shit up. Right?
Yep.
Do you need to lie for that?
Yeah.
Turns out.
Also, you can get fucked by a dog.
Okay. Still, it turns out that there is at least one academic legacy of her work.
Marcia's trying to hand me a piece of paper. I'm not taking it.
So the thing is, there's at least one academic legacy of her work, because Outrages is now being used during university courses as a cautionary example of the dangers of misreading your sources.
I bet.
Great. Or as it says on the book jacket, being used during university courses. Michael Marshall.
So to say that Wolf took this huge public humiliation badly is an understatement. Just 2 months later, in July 2019, she was warning against the dangerous rollout of 5G, and she tweeted, "It was amazing to go to Belfast, which does not yet have 5G, and feel the earth, sky, air, human experience, feel the way it did in the 1970s. Calm, still peaceful,
really?
Natural, restful." And that was a sentiment that showed her customary depth of understanding of history, given that Belfast in the 1970s yes. was rather famously not very calm and very rarely peaceful.
Yeah, the G's calmed it down in Belfast by the end of the 90s. They only needed like 2 out of 5 G's. Her math doesn't even make sense.
And so that was late 2019. And already by this point, a novel virus was evolving in a wet market in Wuhan, which would capture the mind of this conspiracy-prone writer. The pandemic was a perfect storm for Naomi Wolf, with her overestimation of her own intellectual ability to figure out what's true, her sloppy research methods, and her hair-trigger instinct for identifying in the shadows surefire signs of the looming totalitarian regime. Especially so soon after the high-profile humiliation that she'd suffered over her most serious academic work live on air.
Yeah, no, the pandemic was a goldmine for anybody who knew how to sound correct without being burdened by an intellectual desire to actually be correct.
So what you're saying is I missed my opportunity? I've missed my opportunity already?
You don't sound correct.
I do! You liars. Hurtful.
So from March 2020...
Stop trying to hand me paper. Slap it out of your hand.
From March 2020, her Twitter, her Facebook, and her Telegram channel, that's a bad sign that she had a Telegram channel, they became a clearinghouse for misinformation about masks, about the virus, about the lockdown, and about vaccines. That included telling her 140,000 Twitter followers that COVID-19 restrictions were tantamount to the Jim Crow laws.
Jeez.
It also included explaining how terrifying it was in these post-mask times because, quote, children don't have the human reflex that when you smile at them, they smile back, because she was seeing kids with their lower faces hanging inertly, absolutely unmoving facial muscles when they take their masks off.
Okay, all right, but well, maybe those kids just saw you on that interview. You know?
Yeah. Also, I think she's lying. I don't think she went around logging the facial musculature of babies after they take their masks off. And then I guess comparing that to her data on baby embouchure from previous decades? What the fuck? That's nothing.
Either that or she's gone back in previous decades and found records saying smile recorded and assumed that means the baby was smiling at the time. So once the COVID vaccine was released, she put her keen research mind to work on it, explaining that she'd read the Moderna website about, quote, how the mRNA is not actually a vaccine, but a software platform, before adding, I actually work with developers who create software, so I understand how dangerous it is to have a tech in one's body that can receive uploads.
What?
Okay, now she's coming after my butt egg, okay? And the fact that that is Wi-Fi is my business.
So she then went on to explain that this actually makes a lot of sense of a conversation that she overheard in a restaurant in Manhattan in 2019, quote, in which an Apple employee was boasting about attending a top secret demo. They had a new tech to deliver vaccines with nanoparticles that let you travel back in time. Not kidding, unquote.
What?
And look, it's hard to know what that conversation was that she overheard, but it might be relevant that Avengers Endgame came out in 2019, in which the heroes, essentially, inject themselves with nanoparticles in order to travel back in time.
Okay. All right, so another plausible theory, by the way, is that the Apple employees at that Starbucks realized there was a lady eavesdropping on her, and they just started saying the silliest shit they could think of.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just put the secret code into the click wheel of this iPod that's actually a time machine and zoop. Hey, lady, we got to take off for a second. Can you watch our stuff? We're going to be back in like 10 minutes.
So in April 2021, she made international headlines after using her former feminist credentials to amplify myths that the vaccines were causing infertility in women, which they obviously weren't. And later the same month, she claimed that Anthony Fauci, he doesn't actually work for the US because he has loyalties to Israel that interfered with service to public health. Now, Wolf, it's worth pointing out, is Jewish. And that is a fact that she used to deflect criticism for sharing what at this point was very obviously an anti-Semitic trope about dual loyalty.
She started Hamas in 1987. It's the perfect crime!
And these claims, they continued, including claiming that unvaccinated people report feeling ill when in enclosed rooms for a length of time with vaccinated people because the virus could have been a Chinese bioweapon.
The virus and the vaccine were both an evil plot. It's the perfect crime, I guess, right?
Yeah,
right.
And she highlighted the urgency of keeping the urine and feces of vaccinated people out of the general sewage supply while tests are being done to measure its impact on non-vaccinated people through drinking water. And speaking of drinking water, she recently tweeted that she's backing all bans on fluoridated water and that she's thrown out all of her fluoride toothpaste.
You got to feel like, you know, keep our feces clean is a tough sell. You know, I mean, I hate everything that she's doing, but kudos for taking on a challenge.
It's fair.
Also, you live in New York City. There's fluoride in the water. What are you doing? You're going to like the Italian restaurant being like, I'd like my pasta boiled in this bottled water right now. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
So look, it's no surprise then that her political allegiances have very much shifted throughout this time. She actually appeared on the Charlie Kirk Show in May 2022 to warn about military-age men pouring over the border from places like Afghanistan and Ukraine, neither of which are on the border to America. And she said those were in order to be armed on behalf of the World Health Organization, who are apparently arming all of these guys. She also she's appeared on Fox News. She's appeared on Tucker Carlson, on Steve Bannon's War Room. She's even appeared on InfoWars with Alex Jones.
Ugh.
And in 2024, this feminist trailblazer threw her weight behind those staunch allies of women, Donald Trump and RFK Jr.
Yep.
But even the final conclusion of her political transition didn't happen without suspicious circumstance, because she explained last October at the time, quote, I endorsed President Donald Trump yesterday. Today, all day, my phone froze. The cursor on my computer started wandering around the desktop and my Wi-Fi continually disconnected, all coincidentally.
I've been silenced. She posted on Twitter and got 4.2 million views on it.
Yep. Well, yeah, but it was really hard for her to click on the right stuff with her fucking cursor moving around. By the way, if you want an absolutely delightful long-term version of this story, I cannot recommend Naomi Klein's book, Doppelganger, enough. Fantastic fucking book about this.
Yeah. Marsh, have you figured out what your book about me is going to be called yet? Or are you sort of...
Well, it's going to be written posthumously after you die. So I figure I've still got probably like months left to decide on the title. But I'm leaning towards Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
But I'm going to spell it incorrectly because it's what you will have wanted by then, I suspect.
It is.
So as the New Statesman summarized, perhaps it's not that Wolf is a feminist who's degenerated into conspiracism, but instead that she's a conspiracy theorist who happened to fall into feminism first. And whether she was a feminist who became a conspiracy theorist or a conspiracy theorist who became a feminist, either way, she is undoubtedly worthy of her place in Who's Woo.
All right, well, Marsh, we're always excited to have you on, and we look forward to seeing you the next time that we couldn't be bothered to do our homework. Before we tape this episode up and get it weighed, I want to make sure everybody's aware that next Thursday is American Thanksgiving. We are going to be taking that week off again this year, so there will be no new episode this week, but we'll be back the week after a little bit fatter and a little bit jollier. And by then, we can let you know how much we crushed that $100,000 Vulgarity for Charity goal by if you go to recoveringfromreligion.org and donate now. Even if you can't donate $50 for a roast, you can still help us get over that total. Check the show note for a link. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you tonight. We'll be back in 10,022 minutes with more. If you can't wait that long, be on the lookout for a brand new episode of our Sister's Hot Friend God Awful Movies, debuting at 7 Eastern on Tuesday, and an even new episode of our Half Sister's Citation Needed, debuting at noon Eastern on Wednesday. Obviously, this will be the worst time of year to forget to thank Heath Enright for his charity, Eli for his vulgarity, Lucinda for her clarity, and Marsh for his hilarity. Also want to thank Eat Meal for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. He had nothing to plug, but wanted to remind you that the ASPCA is always looking for help. But most of all, of course, I want to thank this week's best people, but we're recording all kinds out of order this week because we're getting ready to take a week off. So I don't know those people's names yet, but I promise to thank them on the next episode. And if you'd like to hear your name alongside theirs, you can make a per episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, whereby you'll learn early access to an extended ad free version of our episode. Or you can make a one time donation by clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. But hey, I'll tell you what, this week, don't do that. Go to Vulgarity for Charity instead. Go to recoveringfromreligion.org. And if you'd like to help, but you spend all your money going to Vulgarity for Charity, like I just said, you can also help a ton by leaving a 5-star review, telling a friend about the show, and following us on social media. And speaking of social media, Tim Robertson handles that for us. And our audio engineer is Morgan Clark, who also wrote the music that was used in this episode, which was used with permission. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com.
We didn't get booked. I applied for the comedy festival at Riyadh, everybody. They said no. Didn't want a live cam.
This content is CAN credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm at their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2025. All rights reserved.